ahead and pick the speed up. Your number one now, runway 27, clear to land green dot. Welcome to Oshkosh, guys.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of EAA's The Green Dot, a podcast for anyone and everyone who loves aviation. I'm one of your hosts. I'm Chris Henry, the museum manager here in Oshkosh, Wisconsin. And across from me, making her Green Dot debut, I believe.
Yes.
Is our vice president of EAA Aviation Foundation, Margaret Brill.
Hello.
Margaret, thanks for coming on.
Yeah, you're welcome.
This is awesome.
Happy to be here.
No stress. We got you all mic'd up and everything. You're feeling good and ready for a fun episode.
Yeah, just hoping I don't say anything stupid.
It's all right. It's all right. I do it all the time. No worries. And with us, we have a very special guest. And my favorite episodes are really, I love doing every episode, but I really enjoy getting to host guests both in person and virtual. And today we have someone who is a very dear friend and a very big supporter of EA, and it's Tammy Barlett. Tammy, thank you for being here.
I'm honored to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
Well, absolutely. I've gotten to work with you many times over the past, not just in your own appearances, but so many of our really wonderful, powerful women speakers have come from something that you've created, which we'll talk about here in a few moments. But first, let's talk about you. And, you know, what was your first sort of exposure to aviation that you were like, you know what, this is something I want to go do?
Well, it's a pretty funny story, actually. It kind of surprises people, but I'm not the only one who has this story. I was in high school and I was very interested in going into the military, but I didn't know anything about the military. And I decided to ask a guy in a college class I was taking at the time because he was in the Navy. And he suggested that I check out Air Force ROTC. So I did just that. And I went to the University of Minnesota's Air Force ROTC program. I found their office. I, you know, wandered around campus until I found it. And I went in and said, hey, I'm interested in joining the military. And they're like, okay, great. And of course, one of the first questions they ask people who want to join Air Force ROTC is, do you want to be a pilot? And I will be very blunt here. And I was very naive. They were like, they asked me that question. And I thought, pilot? Yeah, I want to do that. I want to have an office in the sky. That sounds amazing. I had never even considered it because I didn't know any pilots. I didn't even know anyone in the military. I just was drawn to this. And then when they said, do you want to be a pilot? I thought, heck yeah. I mean, I was a gymnast. I was a roller coaster kid. I was a tree climber. It sounded perfect. So that's where I got started.
Well, can you tell us a little bit about your journey as far as like what type of aircraft did you fly through training?
Yeah, of course. So I applied for a pilot training slot, and obviously I got one or we wouldn't be having this conversation today probably, but I went to pilot training at Laughlin Air Force Base and I started out in the T-37 Tweet, which they don't have anymore. I actually got to fly one into the Boneyard years ago in the early 2000s. And after that, I got selected to go down the fighter bomber track and I went through training in the T-38 Talon. And when I graduated from pilot training, which takes about a year, I was assigned as an instructor pilot in the T-37. They're called FAPES, First Assignment Instructor Pilots. So that's what I was. And although it's an honor to be assigned as an instructor pilot immediately after pilot training, it was disappointing to not go to a fighter jet right away. But the truth is, God knew what he was doing and had a great plan for me. And I learned that I loved to teach. It was one of my favorite jobs. So I completed that tour, and then I went and I flew the mighty A-10 Warthog. I went through training in Tucson, and then I got assigned to Korea. And when I got back to Tucson I was transitioning into the Bulldogs, I ended up having to have cervical spine reconstruction. And so I transitioned into the Air National Guard full-time and started flying unmanned platforms, remotely piloted aircraft, or RPAs. So I flew both the MQ-1 Predator and the MQ-9 Reaper. I went through U.S. Air Force Weapons School in that platform. And although, you know, I missed flying, I knew that it made an impact every single day what we did. So that was really a really powerful thing for me to be able to make a difference every day. And then in 2011, I got an exception to policy to get back in the cockpit, a high G cockpit. And I ended up going back to Laughlin Air Force Base and instructing in the T-38 for the last 6.5 years of my career. Because again, I just love instructing flying. I love teaching. It's my favorite thing.
Okay, so we have to ask a couple A-10 questions because it's a near and dear favorite here. Margaret, you want to start?
So what was it like to fly the A-10 for the first time, Tammy?
Oh, you know, I'll be honest and say I'm such a focused person that I don't, you know, you don't remember specific moments. I'm like, I was so focused on making sure I did everything right. And if you know anything about the A-10, you know that there are no two-seat models.
Yeah.
Which means the first time you fly it, you're by yourself. And I do remember thinking, you know, you're kind of hesitant, like, really, I'm going to go do this?
Yeah.
But it's an awesome aircraft to fly. And to be honest, it was like a big T-37, big fat wings, very forgiving. I mean, you still obviously have to be very cautious and careful. But I loved it. It was incredible. And getting to fly low and slow and, you know, like just doing mountain passes and, you know, shooting the gun was just phenomenal.
So what was it like to shoot the gun for the first time?
I think it was it was a little bit, you know, I don't want to say scary, intimidating maybe.
Sure. Yeah.
Like, am I going to do this right? But it is awesome. I think being able to, on the backside, say that you've done it is one of the coolest things. Now, obviously, actually shooting the gun is much cooler. In fact, my last A-10 flight in Korea, I went out to the jet and they needed to do some work on the jet, on the gun specifically, and it had a full load in it. So they told me, they said, we need you to shoot the whole gun out.
Oh.
And if you know anything about it, it has 1,170 rounds of 30 millimeter in it. So that was a pretty awesome Finny flight for me in Korea.
Yeah, I would say so.
We had, thanks to you, we had KC here.
Yeah.
And KC told us that they didn't consider you an A-10 pilot until you'd shot the gun. Mm-hmm. She said that was the defining moment. So
yeah, she is one of my mentors. I look up to her. She is so incredible. Yeah, KC's awesome.
Yeah, it's fantastic. I always loved that comment, though, that you couldn't be an A-10 pilot until you actually fired the gun.
Yes. Valid.
So over the aircraft that you have flown between the A-10, the T-38's another legendary airplane, do you have a favorite?
Well, I mean, I have to say the A-10 is my favorite because of its role, you know, protecting people. That's what an amazing role to be able to protect our troops on the ground. I mean, I did that in the unmanned platforms as well, but you know, being up in the air, actually doing it, I didn't physically get to do it. As far as I wasn't deployed in the A-10, but I trained for it and I was ready and I would have loved to do it. But in Korea, we were considered forward. So we didn't deploy from that location. And then I had my cervical spine reconstruction, but I will say that my favorite thing is formation. Like if it had to be pick a plane or pick a mission, like not that's a mission, but I love formation. Doesn't matter what aircraft you're in, but specifically in the T-38, it was really challenging. It was really fun. I absolutely loved doing rejoins. I find it really interesting to have something that's so aggressive, but you have to have so much finesse. Like the combination of aggression and finesse is awesome to me. Like to try and combine those two things and make everything smooth and, you know, work with another aircraft and like just be in sync. I just loved it.
So what did you prefer flying more? Did you enjoy flying manned or unmanned missions more?
Well, I definitely enjoyed manned missions more as far as, you know, like the enjoyment factor, if that's what you're asking. For me, as far as like making the biggest difference, which is a different question, but unmanned was, you know, higher level for that because my unmanned time was, I mean, I flew like 3,000 hours of, I mean, in those platforms and like 1,500 hours of combat support time, meaning the aircraft I was flying was over there. I wasn't physically over there, but knowing I was making a difference, I love making a difference in people's lives. And you know, as much as flying is super fun. And again, that part was more enjoyable, but just in my heart, knowing that I was helping people, that was a really powerful thing for me. So I really enjoyed the unmanned mission because of that.
So am I right in understanding that you flew some of those unmanned missions while you were pregnant?
You are correct.
Okay.
Yes. And it's funny because it was 2008. 2007. It was 2007. I had just gotten married, and I took a pregnancy test, and because we were trying to have kids right away, and it came back positive, and I was so excited. And I went into the flight dock because I wanted to make sure, because you know, it was the first time, and I was. And he says, "Yeah, congratulations, you're pregnant." And I'm like, I was so excited. And he looks at me and he says, "And you're grounded."
Ugh.
Oh. I'm like, what am I grounded for? I'm 3 feet off the ground in a trailer on the other side of the base. That yeah. doesn't make any sense. Yeah. And he said, well, our regulations, we have to apply manned aircraft regulations to you because we don't have separate unmanned regulations right now. Hmm. And I said, oh, okay. So, you know, I go back to the squadron, and it's unfortunate because I was a senior IP at the time. And of course, everybody knew because I just gotten married. They're like, oh, you're pregnant, which is not exactly what you want to happen.
How you want everybody to know. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Thankfully, it went well for me. It didn't for somebody else. So that was unfortunate. But I was grounded for the first trimester. They applied heavy aircraft rules to me, which at the time, they're different now, but at the time, you could fly second trimester. So I got cleared to fly. And during those first two trimesters, I worked together with the flight doc to get the paperwork and everything in to, you know, get it changed so that
yeah, you did.
Women flying unmanned platforms could fly till 36 weeks. And so by the time I did get to my third trimester, I could fly the entire time.
Wow.
That's awesome.
I remember you telling me a story that you had told folks on the ground after you flew a combat sortie that, hey, by the way, you know, your close air support today, I'm actually pregnant, you know, or something like that. I remember you telling me a story like that.
Yeah, there was a moment where there was some bad guys out there and, you know, putting an IED and, you know, we have to protect our troops. They're going to drive through and I don't want anyone losing limbs or lives. And it was determined that we need to do something about that. And so before that had happened, though, it was funny is because I, being pregnant, you know, you have to go to the bathroom all the time, and I'm sure this is not a conversation that comes up on this podcast all the time. I asked for a bathroom break, and as I came back in, the guy who was sitting the seat for me is like, hey, you got a 9 line, which means you have a target. And I'm like, okay. So I sat down and figured what was going on and got all the details, and we shot the missile and the Hellfire. And then after, there's a, you know, we talked to him on the radio and we talked to him in secure chat, and I'd said to him, I said, clearly you could tell by my voice that I'm female, but I also wanted to let you know I'm 7 months pregnant. And, you know, anything to just, you know, the guys on the ground over there, and I mean guys in general specifically, not that's not gender specific because I'm from Minnesota. We say guys, right? Hey, guys.
Hey, guys.
yeah. So anything to, you know, that puts a little like smile on their face, we'd do it, you know, I mean, and so that was kind of funny to them.
Yeah,
that's great. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Well, let's transition a little bit, because I could talk to you all day about your military-specific background, but there's so much with you that we want to make sure we shine a light on here. Can you tell us a little bit about what you did to start Athena's Voice and the sort of reasons behind that and, you know, how that came to be?
Of course, yeah. Well, when I was a couple of years from retiring, I was sitting at the same desk I'm sitting at right now. And my husband walks up to me and he says, you know, I know what you're going to do when you retire. And I kind of looked at him like, okay, yeah. Okay. Tell me, what am I going to do when I retire? And he said, motivational speaking. And I instantly got a little bit nauseous and thought, what? I don't know. I don't think so. I don't want to be on stage with, you know, like, I don't like being the center of attention. I love being part of a team, but being alone like that, I thought, no, I'm not going to do that. But I kind of mulled it over for a while and realized that there are a lot of women who are very, you know, humble, and they will quietly walk away from their career and never tell anyone what they did because it seems egotistical to, you know, maybe like they're bragging about what they had done. And so I think that too many people go off quietly into the night. And I thought, you know what? This is part of the reason that we're continuing to have to fight the same battles is because we don't talk about it. And I thought we need to get more people up on stage, more women sharing their stories. And so I reached out to Heather Penny and I said, hey, I think I'm ready to do this. You know, it was a little bit when I determined that when I thought it was selfish to be on stage, I couldn't do it But when I learned that I felt like I was being more selfish, not sharing my story, and it was selfless to get up there and share in a way that you can impact a lot of people's lives, that's when I was open to the idea. Mm-hmm. So I reached out to her and I said, how do you do this? And because she'd been speaking professionally for a while, and she said, you know, we should start a business. There's more work than I can handle, and let's do this. And I said, okay. And I don't think I would have done it without her, because again, I'm a team player. I love having a partner and things too. So she got me going, and she's not a partner anymore because she's super busy, but she's still part of the speaking team. So what we did was we basically got, right now there's 10 women who are all military pilots who are on our website, athenasvoiceusa.com, but we're a speaker referral business. So if you're looking for a powerful female speaker for an event, that's what we do. And the reason that I, you know, another reason it was so important to me that we start this is I think about if you were to come upon a forest and there's no trail, you are going to blaze your own trail. If you have enough, you know, that you want to go where it's on the other side. And if you do not keep that trail, you know, like clear or lit and lit up, that it gets overgrown. So the goal really of this Athena's Voice is to share our stories in a way that we keep the trail clear, lit, and it helps people get as far as we got way quicker than we ever did. And then they can take that path and go way beyond where we ever went. That's the goal.
That's fantastic. I just absolutely love the mission that you do with Athena's Voice. And in the past, I mean, and that's how we've really been very fortunate to work with you to get some of the really amazing people we had here. I mean, just last year we had the first three women combat pilots.
On stage for the first time since 1993, yep.
That was awesome. Yep. Yeah, yeah. I started working with Margaret at Theater in the Woods, specifically on the Wednesday night portion, and for the last few years, including yourself, you've made an appearance there as well.
Yep.
Yeah.
One of which people got to see and one that people didn't get to see because we had a storm. So
yeah.
Yes. That storm was a little bit scary, but thankfully it missed the field.
Absolutely. I always love to tell people the story that like we're evacuating the field and people were still stopping us to ask for autographs from you. And you had like fans traveling, which was amazing. But I do think it's so important what you're doing, what Margaret is doing here, which is one of the real reasons I wanted to get Margaret on this episode as well. Because, you know, you in past have supported the programming around Women Venture. Mm-hmm. And Margaret, you've grown Women Venture to what was just outside of just a day to a lot more. And do you just want to talk a little bit about what you're doing with the Women Venture side?
Sure. So, like Chris said, Tammy has come and been a speaker for us, which is amazing because, to your point, to be able to share your story with others, whether they realize that... they want that your story will inspire them or not. It's just great to hear the stories and of the women who have come before. So EAA Women Venture has been happening for 15, 16 years. And we always had a keynote speaker over the lunch, and we do a photo on the plaza where we have the free t-shirts. And then we do a panel at night. And it was around this discussion of how could we grow it? And Tammy, interestingly enough, Heather Penny as a through line there, right? How can we grow what we're doing throughout the week? So in 22, we launched the EAA Women Venture Center, which allowed us to have a presence on the ground all week of Air Venture instead of just on Wednesday. The center, we invited other women organizations, aviation organizations, to come and exhibit because EAA knows that we are here for anyone that's interested in general aviation. But there are all these other wonderful organizations that offer something as well. And when we work together, we're stronger. We complement each other. So the center holds 13 different exhibit spaces, and women can come in, or the public really can come in and learn how to support women in their aviation journeys, their careers, however they see fit. And then last year, we expanded the programming of the center to include a forums area in the back So now during the week, we have six forums that take place Monday through Saturday, and they are a wide variety of speakers that come in, women who have been in the military, women who are mechanics, some are sharing the history of the WASP, you name it. They're there to kind of share their story and their path and how you can get connected to aviation. And of course, we still have the keynote launch, the panel, the photo on the plaza. And this year, we are focusing on helicopters and vertical lift. So our keynote speaker and our panel will highlight those aspects of flight. Last year, we did the 30 years of women in combat, being able to fly in combat. So that was... I was just talking to someone about it last week, and it still gives me goosebumps when I think about what we did and the people we brought together last year to have Mace be the speaker during the day, and then to bring these women out on stage and people like Tammy and others who had fought and you know, it was a great moment. Eileen on stage, right? So I know I'm forgetting people, but it was truly amazing, and to be able to put that together for everyone, because Tammy, I get what you're saying about how it feels great to be part of a team more than it is yourself, right? To be able to go out and do that and do it for other people. That's kind of what I do each day. So, in the foundation side of things, right?
Yeah. Absolutely. And I love it, you know, because I'd worked at Theater in the Woods evening side for a few years. And since Margaret and Margaret Viola as well, you know, I just love that, you know, early on, I remember it was sort of a challenge laid down by yourself, the other Margaret, Viola, and Heather, where it was like, hey, this is cool, but we need to do this better going forward. And we have ideas. And it was really, I mean, I've seen the nighttime programming grow into this really dynamic, you know, when we're talking about, you know, these heavy themes that are really, really cool. And then it creates these special moments, like having Sharon Pressler and those folks last year together. And they're like, oh, this is actually, yeah. And they're like, this is the first time we've actually all been together since, you know, that since the press briefing. And those historic moments are just absolutely amazing. So it's been really cool to get to be part of that with you all. And it's just been really amazing. And Tammy, you've been such a big part of that. So, and now it's funny because you have so many different chapters in your life where, like, that first chapter could be its own book and the second chapter could be its own book. But that doesn't stop. You even have another chapter and you're working on something else that's actually benefiting, I really think, not just aviation, but anybody that really – I think anybody could kind of use the messaging of what you're working on right now. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah. So it kind of happened when I was creating my keynote, because, you know, if you create a keynote, it's not just your story. I mean, the stories are great, but you need to have a message. Mm-hmm. And what was my message? And, you know, I realized I had all my stories were all stories of perseverance. And what I like to call, you know, a lot of it was social courage too. I mean, I think a lot of situations can be dangerous physically and we'll just plow through them. But when they're socially dangerous, we tend to pull back. And so I share my story about how I was socially courageous. And then it kind of morphed into realizing, you know, because I had to reverse engineer, how did I do everything? Because my tendency is to want to tell people, oh, just don't quit. You just do it.
Just do it.
But that, that doesn't really help anyone with the how. And so I took some time and I realized that a lot of what I was doing and in conjunction with my last few years teaching at pilot training, I realized that I was using mental performance training techniques, not only for myself as the how I got through most things, but I started teaching them to the students. And I didn't know that's what I was teaching at the time until I did this reverse engineering to figure out what exactly was going on in my career and then in the last few years when I was teaching. Because in pilot training, I realized that although stick and rudder instruction is obviously clearly very important, that's how you teach people how to fly, that it was the mental performance and mindset training that I was offering them that I didn't even, you know, realize that's what it was that made the most significant impact in their trajectory. Someone who had some absolute skill to fly could end up failing out of the program because they didn't believe it, they didn't understand it, they weren't aware of their own mind and the power of what it can do, both positive and negative. Mm-hmm. And so I went through some mental performance training. I got a certification, and it was for athletes because I don't have it for pilots, but I have taken it and I've transitioned it, you know, all the applications into flying. And I created a 4-week online course. It's mental performance training for aviators. And the goal really is to help in a lot of different areas, but the key areas it helps is confidence, focus, performance, anxiety. Ultimately, all those will increase safety. And because the goal really, once I started interviewing general aviation, because my focus is on general aviation, I started interviewing a lot of general aviation pilots. And I learned that were a lot of them that were just felt alone, and not only just alone in their journey of flying, but alone in their struggle. And they didn't talk about it. And when they hear someone like me say, "Hey, yeah, I definitely wondered if I could do this," and, you know, have all the doubts and anxieties and how did I do that? You know, I teach them tools, how to get through that. And so I launched the course in November, and it has been like heartwarming, the results. I mean, people have said to me it's changing their lives, and they're so grateful they found my course. And, you know, they're the ones that are changing their lives. They're the ones that are willing to do the work. The course is only going to work for those who are willing to do the work. I'm just giving them the information in a way that they can apply it to aviation so that they can change their aviation path in a way that makes them feel confident and successful, and they want to go forward and understand that aviation is difficult, but they can get through it. And I've found my place. Like, this is the first time in, you know, specifically post military where I'm like, I love this. I cannot wait. Like, when I stop working, I can't wait to come back and do more work and do more research and do more for my course and my students. So it's been awesome.
That is awesome.
Well, it's really cool that you're taking, you know, the lessons that you were taught in the Air Force and you're using it for general aviation. You know, one of the things that I remember talking to you once about was that, you know, in the Air Force, if you're in a flight, you know, and sometimes if you mess something up and you guys land and you debrief, everybody kind of owns their stuff. Like, hey, you know what? I did this wrong. I'm going to work on this. And you kind of make a sort of a promise to the squadron, right? Or to your flight. Where in general aviation, a lot of times you don't do that. You know, I mean, it's kind of like, oh man, I had a bad landing. I'd hope nobody saw that. I don't want to talk about it. Where it's okay to actually talk about, boy, I had a rough landing, and here's some techniques I think I had to go work on. I mean, that's a hard pill to swallow sometimes.
Yeah. One of the biggest things that comes up in the course is dealing with perfection and perfectionism.
Yep.
When I was younger, I wore it as a badge of honor. My mom was like, she's a little perfectionist. And I thought, yep, that's me. And I can't believe that it was so backwards. Like, being a perfectionist is actually harmful. They found that perfectionists, you know, someone who is a moderate perfectionist will perform much better than someone who's a really, you know, like top notch, like I'm a perfectionist, because those people who are only moderate perfectionists will actually act more. And the ones who are really very perfectionist, they'll wait and they'll never act. But more what I'm getting to would be like, when it comes to errors, you know, when people are perfectionists and they make an error, they get really frustrated. And what I often like to say is, what people will do is they'll take their error and they carry it around in a bowl. Like, everything that goes with the error is in this bowl. And like I'm going to remember this. I'm not going to forget this. And I'm not going to do it again. And I get the idea of that. But what you need to do instead is you need to use a strainer. You need to, you know, funnel that, you know, that error through that strainer, let the junk go that needs to go. And you do not need to carry that around because it's just negativity that's sitting inside you. But you need to, you know, strain out that gem. Like, what did you do in that error? What was the root cause? So that you can learn. You have to be curious. You don't want to, you know, you have to be curious about your error to think, well, what is it that I did? What is the gem that I can take away so that I don't do this again? And that's what you want to have left. And, you know, I mean, that's the thing. People don't like making mistakes, but sometimes, as we all know, we're grateful for our errors because I made that error. I didn't make a bigger one because I learned this lesson before it was too dangerous or before, you know, whatever it is. We all make mistakes, you know?
Yeah. I've actually heard that before, that failure is just, it's part of the process, and you can't avoid failure because then you don't grow. Right. So it goes back to what you're saying, right? Failure is going to happen. How do you learn from it? How do you grow from it? And how do you make yourself better?
Yeah. And I think that sometimes people, they have a hard time framing it, you know, and okay, they get intellectually that failure is part of the process, but sometimes they need to, you to take it to like break it down and go, oh, that's why it matters.
Yeah.
You know, and I even tell students when I would fly with them, I would say there's no perfect flight. The only difference between you and me is how many mistakes you make and how big they are.
Yep.
And when I make mistakes, I'm going to tell you, you're going to see what I do. You're going to see how I react and you're going to see me fix it. You're not going to see me cry and cover it up. So, because we all do it.
Right. So since you've started, I know you've been at it since November. Is there a favorite success story that's kind of risen to the top for you that you'd be willing to share? Or
yeah, there was a, I had a helicopter pilot join the course, and I mean, she's an instructor pilot. It wasn't like she was brand new, and she was just struggling a little bit with confidence, and she knew it. And she showed so much wisdom in enrolling in the course and taking it. And she took all the principles and did all the exercises. And recently I got an email from her because she's a rescue helicopter pilot. And it was, first of all, heartwarming to hear her say, you know, someone said, oh, you know, that you saved my life. You know, that's obviously great. But she is now, she feels super confident, in like not overly confident, but enough, you know, where she's out there in bad weather rescuing people. And she has crew members around her now that are giving her feedback that, you know, like they want to fly with her. She gives them the feeling that she knows what she's doing, but she's not cocky about it. And they feel confident and comfortable in her skills. And so the presence she's giving off externally is matching how she's starting to feel inside, which is great. And just to know that like, this is a, you know, effect that's going well beyond just my, you know, the 4-week course that I have, it's nice to know that it's going further than that.
It is always interesting to me when people like you share your stories or, you know, and I say people like you, I view you as someone who's very successful and I look up to, and to hear you talk about having, you know, maybe a lack of confidence, or this person that you're working with, like maybe having a lack of confidence. And it just kind of helps reframe it too, to say like, everyone feels these feelings. Everyone mm-hmm. has something that they're working on. And it's nice to share that message with others then too.
Yeah. And I think sometimes it's scary for pilots to, you know, think they might want some help with, you know, what I offer, because they think they should be super confident. And if they even hint to anyone that they lack confidence, the other person's going to look at them and say, well, you shouldn't be flying planes. You know, that's what people think. And the truth is that's actually a dangerous place to be, you know, where you're faking the confidence. Now there's one thing about, you know, like I get that, you know, you can walk around like looking confident and you'll start to feel more confident. But when you really have that inside you where you're questioning yourself, mm-hmm. That's fixable. It's mm-hmm. not an I have it or I don't. Like there's some pilots who are like, oh, they have it or they don't. I disagree. Mm-hmm. I think it's teachable. And you just have to be wise enough and vulnerable enough to come, you know, take a course like I offer and you can work on it.
Yeah. No, it's great that you're doing that.
Well, what's really cool is your victories are literally in the people who maybe push forward and get their wings and yep. keep flying. I mean, that's pretty remarkable.
Yeah, what I'm loving is the other thing I learned when I was doing interviews is there's a lot of people that are just not finishing. I mean, what is it, like 70, 80% people don't yeah. ever follow through and get their license and continue on flying. And although, you know, I'm sure not all of them should be flying because there are some people that just, it's not for them. But I think a significant number of those people with this, the training I'm offering could turn that around. It's, I mean, that's the one thing people say, I was going to quit. And they say, you stop, you know, your program got me to believe in myself and know that I could give me tools to get through the challenges that I know lie ahead.
Wow. That's great.
Now, are there a lot of similarities you see through the training that you did in like the T-38 that carries through to the courses you're teaching now? Like a lot of the same maybe fundamentals as far as, you know, the mental side of the training?
Are you asking what I was teaching in the 38 when I first discovered I was doing this?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, conceptually, it's the same, but now I have a background that I've done. You know, I went and did a ton of research. So there, when I was teaching in the 38 and I was doing it, it was more just kind of gut instinct. Hey, I think this is good for people. I need to ask what they're thinking. I need to figure out, you know, where they're going with their mind. But then I went and got, you know, trained and I did research and learned about how our minds work and, you know, different tools, because not everyone's going to respond to the same thing. And so I put those tools together and it's more robust. It's the same concept, just much more robust.
Do you think sometimes, like, are there similarities in, like, maybe some of the pitfalls that students went through that you saw in the Air Force, the same as general aviation, that, you know, sometimes that's a red flag of like, oh, I know what's going on. Do you ever see that at all?
Absolutely. I mean, a lot of what we cover is controlling your thoughts.
Yeah.
And our thoughts can take us to some really, really bad places and really put a lot of negativity into us, which will directly affect our performance. I mean, and a lot of it too is ruminating, whether you're thinking, what if this happens, or you're ruminating about something that did happen. That doesn't work in flying. You need to be in the moment. You need to be in the, you know, you need to say what now instead of what if. Like I always tell the students, I said, if you find yourself thinking about past or future when you're flying, the quickest way to get yourself back is to go, what now? What now? And it's very simple. I mean, it seems maybe too simple, but it's how do you get your brain to go, bring me to the moment? Because you have to keep fighting that. You have to be in the moment.
Mm-hmm. Well, I have to tell you, I took one class of your course so far, and it was truly amazing. Like, even if I don't mean this to come off like a sales pitch or anything. I mean, I think it's something that's really great for anybody that's in a cockpit or not in a cockpit. There were lessons just in life, I felt, that I was like, wow, I was not prepared for that. It was pretty cool. Have you heard anybody give you feedback similar to that?
I have, actually. And again, you know, like my biggest thing in life is just being able to make an impact. And when I retired, I was wondering, how am I going to do that? I'm a pilot. And it took me a while. I mean, I retired in 2018, but here I am with this course that I absolutely love. I love teaching it. And, you know, I'm getting a lot of feedback from people saying, you know, this is helping me in my life. I have less anxiety. You know, people are noticing that I'm more calm or composed. And those things, I mean, what you apply in the cockpit can apply outside in life. And, you know, I do intend to create more courses that are, you know, maybe that aren't just for aviators, but right now this is my focus because I really have a heart for making a difference in general aviation.
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, I was just going to say, I know a friend of mine who could maybe start listening to the what you have out there, because they're going to get their pilot's license and they would be interested in learning more.
That's awesome.
Awesome. Well, you know, the one thing too is that the course is not just sign up and you know, do the virtual lessons. That's mm-hmm. That's not it. It's there's 4 weeks. There's about 45 minutes to an hour each week. It's time released. So you can't consume it all in a day because you have to start applying it for it to work.
Yep.
And so, but we also have, there's some assignments and there's some aviation specific assignments I give that are some of my best study tips. And then we also have a discussion group each week, because what I learned is people needed a little bit of community.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there are two of my students who met each other at the Whirly Girls conference this past week, and they're just so grateful. And it wasn't me. I mean, they did it. They did the work, they connected, you know, but I provided an opportunity for them to connect. But it's important that people have community around what they're doing and, you know, that they know they're not struggling alone.
Yeah. Well, community is such a huge part of finding success, I think, in the aviation world, but at pretty much anywhere. Like, you got to kind of find your people and get around mm-hmm. them. And that is, it's funny you say that, because Women Venture, one of the words that we have passion, community, aviation, right? It's so we're trying to build that community of women together to find each other during the week. So it's very important.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, and I have my last discussion group for my current courses tonight. And, you know, it's like, oh, it's going to end. But a lot of times they keep meeting on their own, which is really nice. Just to have somewhere safe to talk.
And I'm sure it's probably not the last time you'll hear from them either. Yeah.
They're all waiting for my CFI course because I'm working on building a CFI mindset course. So.
Oh, that is super cool. I mean, and that's a...
We could use more CFIs.
Being a CFI is a... that is a sort of an unsung hero of aviation. I mean, that's... There's a lot of work to be an instructor. I mean...
Yeah. And I don't think, you know, this happens in not just aviation, but they give you the technical skills, or you're really good at the technical skills and you can do the thing, but you get out there and you're like, I don't actually know how to teach this. And I can help people do that. I mean, I love helping people learn how to teach because it's, you know, the instructor does need to modify their instruction for their student, and they need to read their student, and they need to figure out what's going on in their head. And that stuff's important to the student's performance.
Well, absolutely. And for anybody listening that is interested, where can they find you? Where can they find these courses?
You can go to crosscheckmentalperformance.com and you'll find all the information there. And you can email me. My favorite place is LinkedIn. So if you're on LinkedIn, connect with me on LinkedIn and send me a message. If you need more information, I can give it to you there as well.
Well, thank you so much for your service, both in and after your military career, and everything you've done here for us. And, you know, it's just been such an honor to get to work with you. I always tell people, you know, that phrase out there that says never meet your heroes, working at EA has completely ruined that phrase because it's totally inaccurate. You know, meet your heroes because they're usually cooler than you even thought they were, and you certainly live up to that. And when we talk about community, I've not seen a better example of building that community between a better example than between you and Margaret. I mean, both of you guys, Margaret took a day in aviation and really has built a community around it here at AirVenture. And you've been a big part of helping us do that. So thank you both. It's really been an honor to work with you both doing that.
Well, likewise. I mean, I think there's hidden heroes out there, and there's a lot of people in the world who do so much great work. But because society doesn't classify that as an amazing job, you're not flying a jet. But you guys are awesome, and we couldn't be where we are, and EAA wouldn't be where it is without people like you.
Mm, thank you. I was over here shaking my head to everything that Chris said until he got to me, and then I was like, ah. But no, I truly appreciate getting to know you and all that you do to be a voice out there as well, and then to give back as well. So thank you, Tammy.
Yeah, it's an honor. I am absolutely loving it.
Well, thank you both for being here. And as we talk about community, we produce the Green Dot for our community. And I want to say thank you to everybody that listens, all the kind comments, feedback that you give us. We really try to get a big cross-section of aviation so you can kind of learn a little bit about all the different walks of life and everything that goes into it, because it truly is a huge community. We keep saying that word, but it really is. There's a place for everybody in aviation. So thank you guys for listening. It's your feedback and your emails that allows us to keep going. So thank you to the whole team here, including Scott, who's our silent hero behind the board, running all our sound and everything. But keep the feedback coming, and we'll check in with you next time when we're cleared to land on the Green Dot.